When did you start bringing everything downstairs, just so you don't have to go back upstairs again? Joint Relief Institute. Move better, live better without surgery. Call 708-888-0000.
Austin Berg joins us now. You hear him regularly on our Mincing Rascals podcast. He's the executive director of the Chicago Policy Center, and he's the author of The Last Ward on Substack. The Last Ward on Substack. Morning, Austin. How are you?
Morning, John. Up late with the budget shenanigans in Springfield, but doing well.
How many people can say that? Up late with the Springfield budget shenanigans. Austin Berg does. And was the thing that kept you up late the mega bill project? That is the mega project part of the bills?
Well, what kept me up late is you have no idea what's going to go on in the wee hours of the morning when nobody's watching. So sadly, I am not a rare person in staying up late. So many people who care about state level policy year after year are burning the midnight oil in the last day of legislative session where you see, you know, billion-dollar-plus bills move at the drop of a hat. So that included the Bears, state budget, lots of different things.
And just, this is not why I called, but just what do you think about the mega project deal? Is that a good way to allow the Bears to get some state funding for a stadium without making it exclusively about the Bears? That would seem to be a more palatable way to do this, but maybe it's not a good idea. I don't know. What's your thought about that?
There seems like two approaches that are common in other states. One is this more mega projects approach, which is involves a payment in lieu of taxes pilot program. And if you have simple rules that are broadly enforced across every municipality that they can negotiate these types of pilot deals protecting taxpayers, that seems good. What popped up really late last night was another approach, which is basically a stadium authority, which where in essence the team builds a stadium, then it's given to that local government, and the local government kind of charges rent on the stadium instead of the team paying any property taxes. Both seem pretty common, but it didn't seem like the House and Senate were on the same page with regard to that last night.
You think that this... Go ahead, Austin.
It just didn't end up passing because those two approaches are quite different, and a lot was moving very quickly.
Do you think this makes it more likely that the stadium will be in Indiana, or the team?
I think with every passing day, you'd have to say that it becomes more likely, right? Because if you're a business making, trying to make a business decision, that uncertainty, has a cost. But we'll see. I think the governor is going to have a press conference here in 10 minutes, and we'll see whether he decides to call a special session on this issue to try to get everybody down in Springfield to pass something more quickly.
One of our news bites today, one of the sound bites on WGN Radio News, was somebody saying something like, you know, as a business decision, the Bears have to do what's best for the Bears. And I think my news click is going to be, should the Bears do what's best dollars and cents for the team, or should they defer to the fan base, the emotional side of this? Come on, guys. You know, we've been there for you through thick and thin, and you are the Chicago Bears. Just because you have a maybe better deal in Indiana should not be the deciding factor. Okay, we'll follow the governor's presser later on. You actually wrote a little piece on your Substack about teen trends where kids take over a block, a neighborhood, a park or a beach or an intersection. And the most vexing things, even when the police anticipate them and arrive early, they could not seem to corral it over the Memorial Day weekend. You are good at best practices of other cities, and you wrote about Washington, D.C. What does D.C. do about this?
So in D.C., we saw in summer 2025, the Navy Yard neighborhood, which maybe listeners have visited if they visited D.C., a very vibrant neighborhood. It's really an economic driver for the city. That neighborhood became a real focal point for the D.C. version of teen trends in Chicago. There were these repeated large gatherings that spurred violence and sort of chaos in one of the busiest dining and nightlife districts in D.C. And after a particularly chaotic Independence Day in 2025, the mayor, Muriel Bowser, and the D.C. council put together a plan to address these sorts of teen trends. And they used what are called extended juvenile curfew zones. And it's basically just this area where there is an earlier, stricter curfew where you can have no gatherings of nine or more minors in any public place beginning at 8 p.m. And they last about 4 days. You get around 24 hours notice to folks that these are going into place. And they're commonly used for, you know, big holiday weekends or very large, you know, other sorts of social gatherings. And it seems like, at least so far, the early returns in D.C. over the last year of using this tool and letting it expire and then bringing it back is that it has been very effective at reducing arrests, the amount of teen trends in these in certain really valuable business districts in D.C. And it seems like a very reasonable approach that Chicago should be looking at.
That sounds like a version of the snap curfews that the city is flirting with. Are they like what we talk about in this city?
I think they are a bit different than snap curfews, because I think even the terminology snap curfew, it can give some people pause, right? Snap is sort of seems like, you know, something you're doing, you know, off the cuff or offhand. And there's a little bit more structure to these juvenile curfew zones. Again, you have to have at least 24 hours notice. They can last up to 4 days. They expire. They have to be declared based on cause. So whether there's like recent crime in the area or there's good intelligence about
there needs to be verbal warnings too.
Yeah, you have to get verbal warning from police. There's civil infractions. So I think it's a little bit more targeted of approach of an approach, a little bit more structure, I would say. But it does give the police chief very broad authority in D.C. And I think a similar approach in Chicago would be welcome, because I think Superintendent Snelling has really earned trust of a lot of Chicagoans.
The mayor does not endorse, the mayor of Chicago, the idea of a snap curfew. I don't know how he would feel about this version of this. Do you have a feel for that?
Well, the reason for this research and why we sort of want to pick our heads up and look to other cities at the Chicago Policy Center is that I feel like we're in this repeating cycle, and I'm sure you've observed this, John, where we have a teen trend. It gets out of control. City Council calls for some different law enforcement response or tool, and then the mayor says, no, we shouldn't do what the council says. We need to fund city spending on programs for youth, which I think everybody agrees with. The city should be spending money on those things. But that cycle just repeats. And I think we need some new, fresh thinking, which is why I think looking to D.C., it's a progressive mayor, a progressive council passing these things. I think hopefully that can break the cycle. And I would urge the mayor to be open to an approach like that.
You can read Austin Berg on Substack, The Last Ward. Listen to him regularly on the Mincing Rascals podcast. I had to chuckle when I saw the editorial cartoon this morning in the paper, and it shows a big white whale with the Democrats trying to defeat it. You described the idea of a Democrat representing Texas in the U.S. Senate as the great white whale, and there was the cartoon depicting exactly what you said in the paper. Did you notice that?
It was a beautiful whale, wasn't it?
It was a really big one, too. All right. Always nice to hear you and read you. Thanks, Austin.
Thank you, John.